Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the Catch a Pocket Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Burris, and some takeaways that I have from this interview with the wonderful Michael Lacy is that we should cherish the fun we have in our lives, and without some mistakes, you wouldn't be the person that you've become today. As long as we reflect on the lessons we learned at that time, we will take something from the thing that we had not known before. So, we may even be able to use the lesson later if we're lucky enough to put it all together. So, we're continuing our voyage with Mr. Michael Lacy in part two of our podcast. We ended the last episode with the bands playing a gig and Dead O and O Phil being at America's Pub in Old Town in Wichita before Old Town was a big deal. It was just starting. But the music scene for metal bands was changing. Life changes. And we'll start in on where life is changing for Michael. Thanks for listening again. And in the middle of this episode, I'm going to run a song by Diesel Crutch called Reason for Force. And at the end of this episode, I'm going to conclude it with Dad's Dream, which I hope you stick around for. Thanks for listening and have a great evening or day or afternoon.
Enjoying to something that wasn't enjoyable anymore.
Right.
And it really, I mean, it started with Billy. And because this was kind of indicative to the time that a lot of people were doing drugs in a real bad way. And I was watching a lot of people's lives.
Like getting hooked on heroin, that
no,
kind of
it
drugs?
Was, or meth. Just it was meth.
Meth.
Meth became.
Oh, wow.
And I saw a lot of people go straight down the toilet.
Because of meth. Yeah.
And I was watching all my friends go down the toilet. And the people that were not going down the toilet due to this drug were either getting out of the band scene.
Right.
Or were dying.
Crazy.
And Billy died.
Right.
And that's
on meth or
no,
was it
he was murdered.
Else? He was murdered because
he was
of
murdered over a drug deal.
Drugs.
And that was something I couldn't live with. I mean, it was something that was extremely.
It just shows you what that drug does to people if it'll make you murder someone who's a good person, you know.
And there was
no reason at all.
It was the thing that really bothered me most about it was that there was a culture around the drugs that made it so Billy was murdered, and now there's like, oh, we never found out who did it. Well, there was 100 people to know who did it.
Yeah.
And no one ever said because they didn't want to get implicated in the meth. You know, they didn't want
whatever.
They
were the epidemic. They were part of the problem.
They were part of the problem. They didn't want to be identified. You know, or
right,
so,
or as a snitch, or get a bad name, or whatever.
Yeah.
That's
because they could be next.
Right.
You know, that's for
real.
Well,
if you're ready to kill somebody, you could kill anybody.
Was,
you know.
Yeah, it was a real bad. It was a really dark, dark time as far as music for me.
Right.
And that kind of goes back to the fact that I never needed music to express myself. You know, I was a guitar player. And I mean, I still to this day, you know, people are like, do you still play? And I'm like, no, I don't have any desire to be in a band. You know, that's not something
you
that was
playing in a band, but
I play. You couldn't,
guitar.
I couldn't put down the guitar. If there's ever a spare moment, there's a guitar in my hand. Yeah. Even to this day, you know,
it's your therapy, right?
It's just something I do, you know, I mean, I just can't, but I've always been that person that, you know, if you put too many obstacles in front, if you can't adapt, and I mean, there's this, my dad used to tell a story about, I used to ride my bike when I was a kid, ride my bike. My bike was my life. And they said, you're grounded from your bike. And they chained it to the back porch.
Right.
It rested on the back porch. I never asked for it back. I never, and you know what? I dealt with it.
I
found something
else
to do until I got a new bike. And some kid at school or something was like, I'll trade your bike for your snake or you know, whatever. And
I
was like, yeah, now I got a new bike. That bike can go bite one. And they were just amazed. They're like, I can't believe it. I can't believe that punishment didn't work. You know, well, it did work. I was pissed, but you just adapt. You know, you just keep going. And that's kind of how you did. I didn't need,
during the drug.
Right.
Part of
I didn't
that.
Need a band to play guitar. Right. And I definitely didn't need a band to express myself. And it kind of all went back to that thing.
And
about,
you didn't need crystal meth either. So there you go.
No one needs that. And, there was again, you know, kind of going back to the thing that there was always this drive for acceptance. And I found out at one point, you know, that when I was really in the band, the Cycle Love Tribe thing, and it was really going well and blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't really looking, you know, for my dad's acceptance anymore.
Right.
But there was really this revelation at one point where I overheard my dad playing my tape for people.
Ah.
And he was
proud.
Telling
he was proud of him.
How good I was.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, he never told me that.
Right.
He never told me
but
that.
But it meant more even because probably it meant more than telling you because.
No, F that. He should have told me.
I agree with that though.
He should have told me.
But it is nice.
Wouldn't it, well, you know, like I said at the
nice
beginning of this,
catch them all,
I
proud.
Wish I could say he was one of my influences. I wish he would have been more encouraging or been more involved in my musical education or my musical, you know, background. But he wasn't. And it was because, and the kicker to this was that on the Cycle of Tribe, the end of the tape, we had a few minutes left. Mm-hmm. And Kobe's playing this sweet jazz beat.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean comes in on the bass and starts playing this like lounge shuffle. And I was like, this is begging for some poetry.
Yeah.
Right. So I pick up the mic and we do this deal. And it was a dream that my dad had.
Right.
And he was sitting at the counter and he's telling me about this dream. And he's like, and there was these kittens, and there was white ones, and there were striped ones, and I lifted this board in the garage, and there was just all these kittens. And my mom pipes in, she goes, is that why you wake up in the middle of the night going, sons of bitches, son of the bitches? And I was like, what is that? And I just like, that was so funny. And he was like, well, I do not. And she's like, yes, you did. You woke up saying, sons of bitches, sons of bitches. And I thought this was so bizarre. And I don't know. So I did this whole thing. And it was, I had a dream, and there was kittens. There was white ones and striped ones.
Oh,
and I go,
wow.
And I repeat this 3 or 4 times. And then at the end of it, I go, sons of bitches.
Uh-huh.
And we just all laugh. And that was the end of the tape, you know? And
so awesome.
And it was like, and Tony, the thing, he's like, we were all laughing. And he's like, boy, your old man's going to get credit for this one.
Uh-huh.
And so we put it on the album.
Yeah.
And it was just joking around. And I called it Dad's Dream.
Yeah.
And my dad and mom, and my mom told me this story later, but he was listening to the CD, which, I mean, I still can't believe he listened to it. And I mean, it was just him and mom.
Yeah.
And they got to the end and that little thing, and he was like looking at, and it was Dad's Dream. And he said to my mom, he says, Michael really likes me, doesn't he?
Oh, like he never knew that before?
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah, and that was
sad, actually, you know, to think about.
I never realized.
That he probably thought you didn't like him.
He had the same insecurities that I was dealing with in the opposite. You know what I'm saying? Here we were musically, because of music maybe, polarized in this way. And just he was looking for that same acceptance.
That you were.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, that's very touching.
It makes me tear up a little bit.
No,
in all honesty, because,
it's
a good ending to the story because it closed a chapter in my life that was obviously fueled by that desire to be accepted by him, who I respected so much as a musician, you know.
Isn't
so,
that something?
Yeah, it's something. And in it, but, you know, in a bigger way, because I wasn't, I never tried to, you know, there was a point where I gave up. You know, like I said, I wanted to just be so successful doing my own thing that I was able to go, hey, you know, screw you, man. You know, I made it anyway, you know, whatever. And that's not the way it was. You know, it changed that whole dynamic and that whole thought. But that was the motivation. It's almost like, you know, Dave Mustaine doing Megadeth because he hated Metallica so much for kicking him out of the band.
Then,
you know, and then eventually it was all because, well, you know, look what it did. You know, that's what fueled him in the early days, you know.
And so that's awesome, man, you know.
So it was like, you know, that was that, and that was a big part musically for me, you know, and it's, and
that I'll show you, you know, like,
yeah,
I didn't know that at the time, yeah.
You know, but I can look back at that introspectively, you know, now and realize that, and you going back to Ian Ottaway, which I said I was going to, when I said there was two people that have influenced me more than anybody, and Ian Ottaway taught me nothing musically,
nothing,
but from a perspective of being who you want to be, saying what you want to say, and
all the time,
and reveling in your own brilliance sometimes when no one else will,
because maybe it is or maybe it's not.
He's the most
unique,
the most unique and the most original person, and the most original thinker, and maybe one of the most eloquent storytellers in some of the weirdest ways that I've ever heard in my life.
Scarily.
And if you don't follow him, and I know I'm going to I'm definitely going to put like a link to this interview on that.
Please do.
And so many people that know Ian are going to hear this, and it's so important.
They're going to have to tell him.
You know, and I still talk to Ian all the time.
You'll love that too, you know, because he's so full of himself.
No,
you know?
He's not, though. See, this is the thing about Ian, is that he's not full of him. I mean, I think he's so misunderstood in a lot of ways, but Ian is actually this very beautiful person.
Yeah.
That, you know, and I consider him a soul brother supreme.
Oh, wow.
Me and that guy cannot, you know, we can't. We'll never be disconnected. And, you know, he's in Germany right now.
I didn't know that.
And for years, you know, sometimes we haven't talked and it all comes right back together.
Yeah.
And when there's rough times in our lives,
he's wonderful to talk to. I love talking except for one time he was with my sister too.
You're really making your sister look bad right now.
I'm sorry, Lisa. But they were dating way back. Yeah. And, I like was staying the night there, so, you know, with my friends or something, and he came in and Lisa came in, they might have been drinking or something when they came in, and I'm like sitting there and he put me in a headlock and then passed out. And I was like, I woke up in a headlock.
They're so eyeing for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that guy, his life, and I mean, this is something I admire about Ian, is that he, man, I mean, he for all of the crazy crap that guy has done in his life, he has lived it. Dude,
yeah.
He has never let anything get in his way of doing exactly what he wants to do. And I mean, that's one of the things. I was always like too, you know, I'm like, what happened? You know?
Yeah.
Well, you can't just run off to Finland with some girl you met on Facebook. What are you, insane?
Yeah.
You know, not him. Oh, hell no. He's
like,
going,
I'm
man.
Going.
He's going.
I already bought my ticket.
And he's, man, and I'll tell you, you want to know great. And this is to describe, because Ian, when I first met him, he was like, we need to go to L.A. We need to go to L.A. Man, you're the best guitar player I ever heard. We need to go to L.A. You know, we need to go to L.A. We need to go. Musically, he taught me a lot as far as, like, he introduced me to a lot of different things. You know, he was like, it's okay to be different.
Yeah, he
you
liked.
Know? And I was still stuck in this, you know, high school, college sort of state of mind.
Sure.
And, you know, here's this guy. That's what he brought to my life, you know, was like, be yourself. You know, don't worry about what other people think. And, I mean, that was really a huge turning point in my life, you know, as far as, I never would have been out musically doing the things that I would have done if it wasn't for Ian. And to this day, you know, like I said, he's my
mentor type.
He's, whenever something goes wrong in my life,
mm-hmm.
he can make sense of it for me. It's interesting. Okay. He is
he's like your Buddha or something.
It's a, I like to compare it more to some sort of narcotic because that's really.
He's like your LSD.
Yeah, no,
Ian's
my, you know, my mushrooms? Sedative.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You gotta. I'll take a piece of him whenever things just get
out of hand
too much,
yeah.
You know, or whatever. And I mean, he's an amazing friend in that way, you know, and he's
your Zen master.
Always been there for me, you know, really. And I mean, I truly believe that guy, for all of his weirdness, and Ian's not meant for mass consumption.
No,
you know?
Yeah, he's pretty
funny. But on the level that I know that guy, he's probably the person more than anybody that I think would take a bullet for me, literally.
Wow. Yeah.
I believe that. And, he's an amazing guy. But anyway, a friend of mine had moved to Arizona. Ian went to LA.
Right.
He went. He was like, well, I got to go, Mike. You know,
yeah.
You should come with me. You know,
yeah, be my guitar
I shouldn't
player.
Be the one going to LA. You should be the one going
to
LA.
Yeah, he did go.
And he went. And and after a few years in LA, a friend of mine had started working with a paper in Arizona. He was in Arizona, and he was doing an interview with Alice in Chains. Lane Staley at the time was still alive.
Okay.
And he was interviewing Lane Staley. And he said, originally, I'm from Wichita, Kansas. He told Lane Staley that. He goes, Lane Staley says, I know a guy from Wichita. And my friend, who also knew Ian, said, Ian Ottaway. And he goes, yes.
How did you
know? Yes, Ian Ottaway. He goes, that's the craziest MF-er I've ever met. He goes, he is so bizarre, dude.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, and he's telling me, and Ian talks about Wichita like it's this Land of Oz type place, and like it's this
magical
totally,
and
makes
stuff.
It so weird. And he goes, and just, you know, we're all just kind of like, what are you talking about? He talks about Quick Trips and all this stuff. And he's like, and he's just, and you know, of course you can see Ian spinning tales, you know, that's what he did, you know, and he's a wordsmith, you know, so it's just like, and he's going, man, that guy is just completely out of here. He's the craziest dude I've ever met.
Uh-huh.
Lane Staley said that about Ian. Now, Lane Staley's dead of a heroin overdose
now.
And I'm like...
And he's the crazy one.
That's right. And I always said, you know, and I remember Ian saying, he's like, I got to go to L.A. because people in Wichita don't get me. They'll get me out there. And I was like, no, they won't.
Yeah. Nobody's going to get you.
Nope. I said, you know, it ain't where you go, you know. It ain't going to change who you are, man.
Yep.
You know.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah. And so Ian, but in reality, I mean, I owe him... more in that regard of being my own person than anybody else, you know, as far as, and that has, and, you know, musically that goes back to the same thing, but bands that, you know, being in a band and everything wasn't, and that really came to light when Jason Gordon, from the one who showed up in my living room one day that I thought couldn't play drums, turned around and he told me, he said he wanted to get another band together. And I was like, you know, and I was playing stand-up bass at the time. I'd gotten all involved in, I became a Reverend Horton Heat fanatic. And I was just like, I want to do everything rockabilly, you know. Yeah. I was totally, now, this was in my living room. I was doing all this.
Right, you were in your...
I had no desire, you know.
You were just doing a show for yourself.
I didn't need to go out and get acceptance anymore, you know.
And you were enjoying some Reverend Horton Heat music. Exactly. And drinking whiskeys and having cigars.
I'm Travis Pickett and having a good time. And he's like, I want you to play stand-up bass in a band, but we're going to play, like, they want to do, like, modern tunes. Like, weird shit. And I was just kind of like, oh, it might be kind of, I don't know. Let me check that out.
Their own written tunes?
No, they wanted to do, you know, and this is something that we always kind of, which is, it wasn't something I was opposed to at the time, is like, let's put together, like, a really weird, like, 80s band that plays really weird 80s music and make that the theme, and I bet we'll make a ton of money.
Right.
You know, bet, you know.
Like, for the money, basically.
Yeah, and exactly, know. And I thought, yeah, that would be funny, you
drinks
know?
And money. And
yeah, and there was a band at the time that I think were out of Chicago that were playing at the Loft all the time, and they were called the Plumbers, and they were playing 80s. I mean, they would play like anything, though. Weird. I mean, it's like Funky Town.
They would play,
like,
it all.
Yeah.
And they were like the Lotus of the...
They were friggin' funny, though, man. And if you've ever seen, like, the Spasmatics, it was kind of like that. Okay. They had, like, weird Beatles haircuts, and they were...
Put on a whole show.
Yeah, it was funny as shit. And, I mean, I loved them. They were totally entertaining.
And I liked 80s music, so...
And they were great. Yeah. They were actually great players, but that place was packed every time they played.
People loved it.
And I was like, I would do that. Yeah. You know, that's kind of funny. It was just kind of an idea. Well, Jason decides he wants to kind of move in that, you know, like, and I'm thinking, is that kind of what you're doing? Or...
Because there's already that band there.
You want to do funny like that? And he gives me a list of songs. And I went, no.
Yeah.
No. As a matter of fact, I was like, but I would be embarrassed to play this music ever.
Back to the drawing board.
Even in my living room, I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't let my dog Pablo hear this. You know, it was that bad. So he calls me and he's like, man, what's the deal? What's the deal? What's the deal? And I was like, no, dude. No. As a matter of fact, no. How about no? You know, I got a better idea. No. Yeah. And so he was adamant. And then it started really getting to me. You know, I was like, what is his problem? You know?
Yeah.
And I realized he needed to be in a band.
Right.
He needed to be. And he said that, you know, he said, don't you miss being in front of people? Don't you miss getting that kind of attention? Don't you miss? And I was like,
no.
Well, I didn't, because I realized
he did.
Yeah. And I didn't want to, of course, demean him.
Right.
And I was like, Jason, you know, and I became much softer at that point.
Yeah.
Because I never thought of it. I never thought about that as being something that, you know, and here was the thing.
Right.
Jason saw me as a ticket to that. I was his first ticket to that in the first band. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Because you had the vision. And he saw you as the vision.
And so he was very upset when I wouldn't do this with him. Because now, to his credit, he went on and did it anyway.
Good.
Which is good. Yeah. You know, right. But I had to explain to him. I was like, no, it was never about that for me. I never wanted to be in front of people. It was never, you know, and there was a level of anxiety that went along with playing that really, and I mean, I never
for
really,
you personally.
Yeah, I never really talked about it before, but, you know, there was all the time being in a band wasn't about getting
adulation from people or.
No, it wasn't. As a matter of fact, people that were a little too complimentary or.
Right.
They scared me a little bit because
they felt fake.
No, it was because I don't feel like I deserve that. Ah. And so I'm thinking, if you think I'm so good when I know better than that, you know. Then there must be something wrong with you a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know that, you know that.
Right. Yeah. And that's the self-doubt you have.
Oh my God, you're so good.
And it's the old, oh shucks.
I wouldn't have a club. I wouldn't be in a club that had me as a member.
Right.
You know, that kind of
thing. Right.
And I mean, but it wasn't, you know, it was just a little too much, you know, something. So.
Right.
There was people that I really respected that, yes, I wanted the, and it was my only other musicians really.
Right.
You know? So it was kind of like, that was always more of a, you know, a compliment to me, but not just to be out in front of playing in front of people, you know, that wasn't my thing, you know, and no, but it was his.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, being on stage for me was always kind of a struggle because, you know, this, and it had a lot to do with the music too. Mm-hmm. You know, I could play really pretty, beautiful music, and I do a lot of times.
Yeah.
But on stage, there was no way.
Right.
I had a level of anxiety and a level that the only way it could come out was anger.
Right.
I couldn't go, I'm afraid. Right. You know, they can write a song like that.
Right. And it's true. But if you're really I was getting after it, you're not going to hear
I wouldn't say it was stage fright necessarily, right. But
I didn't need to
be out there. You know, I didn't feel like I've got a gift I have to share or, oh, my music's so great.
Right.
You know, I wasn't that person that, you know, that I was. So yes, I would get on stage and I was always very
working out
stressed. You know, it was a stressful. So
yeah,
the music, that's what the music became, you know, because that's the only thing I could really express on stage anyway. So it was like, I knew that. Those are the songs I was writing.
Natural, yeah. Michael on
that
stage
was what it was,
right there.
You know, you want to be in a band with me, it's going to be
a little bit.
It's going to be a little rough because that's, I couldn't, if I had written a really pretty song.
Yeah.
And then I got on stage to play it.
Would you have been able to sing it?
I wouldn't even have been able to play it physically on the guitar. Because
your fingers would shake a little
clench. I would be clenched, you know, tight. You know, it's like, now, and that's not to say that, I couldn't get into the music and, you know, lose that, you know, that.
Right.
But I mean, I used to just back away from the mic sometimes to scream at the top of my lungs while I was playing because it wasn't, you know, like,
get
yeah,
it out. Yeah,
this is awesome. It was just like, God, I want this to be over.
Right.
You know, it's just,
yeah.
I think people, you know,
I'm kind of like that. Like, I never played in a band and I think it's mostly adrenaline. Like, the adrenaline alone, I wouldn't be able to play.
Yeah, some people really thrive on that, you know, and it's like, I'm a guilty fan of like watching The Voice and those kinds of shows. But one of the things that amazes me is that these people, when they tell their little background stories and stuff, I was made to play music. Nothing's ever going to stop me from playing music.
Right, right.
And you know, and I have a gift and I have to show it to the world. Right. And then they go out there and they're friggin' awesome, you know, and they just blow it away. And I'm like,
and the slowest song and it sound like glass out there,
it's
you
just
know?
Like, and I'm like, how
no
can
tremolo
they not?
At all.
Yeah. And they're so in control of what they do, you know, and everything. And I always felt completely out of control usually when I was on stage, you know, it was just like that was another reason why I felt like the only way that I can not have everybody realize that I'm completely out of control is
to go hard.
to practice until my fingers bleed.
Right.
You know, it's the only
until it's just muscle memory while you're out there because you don't have time to think.
Right. And it's because it's like, I better play at this level. And right now my hand is above my head. I better play at this level.
Yeah.
Be able to play at this level because on stage I'm going to only be able to pull it off about here.
And now it's to his chin.
Yeah, exactly. So, or actually it should be down lower. Maybe.
Well,
but it's
you know, yeah, exactly. So, I want to sound good.
Yeah.
So I have to sound great.
Yeah, but and you know, there was always this weird manicness to being in a band and putting yourself out there like that. And I've given a lot of credit to that, of course that I gotta practice. And
right.
I can remember telling people, it was so funny, you know, and that was a part of my personality at that time, you know, but it was like people would, hey, you wanna come over and watch football? I'd like, why don't you put down that football and play your freaking guitar, dumbass? Maybe you won't suck.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it was always, I was very, you know, I used to get on people's ass all the time, you know, and I could be kind of an asshole about stuff like that.
But that's what we love about
I don't have, but you know, luckily I don't have that, you know, that drive in that direction anymore, but I find myself to play more disciplined now than I probably ever did. And I'm still, it's just kind of, I'll still sit down with a scale or something.
Right.
And drive people absolutely insane. Everybody in the house.
Oh yeah, that does drive people insane, guys. Yeah. I'm telling you right now.
Doing that intricate kind of, I don't know, it's maybe just part of, but I get off on it.
Yeah,
I get
you have to do
tedious
it
weird shit like
order
that.
To, like the G run is something I've been working on for years now.
Oh yeah,
the G run because it's you can play it so many different ways.
That's right.
And if you pull it off, it sounds really cool. Mm-hmm. And but listening to someone play the G run over and over again, maybe not so much
not
fun.
Not so much. No. Exactly. So yeah, that's but it's a good place to be, you know, musically now. And for a while there, and like I said, after what happened with Billy, I really did put it, away because I associated the music with drugs and people's lives being destroyed and with the death of my friend. and
murder, you know.
And yeah, and it's such a, you know, horrible and a horrible community it had created. And mm-hmm. and for some reason, music, it was throwing out the baby with the bathwater scenario. You know, music right. became the baby that got thrown out with the bathwater. Yeah. In that respect. And that was unfortunate for a long time. But and my resurgence into interest in the guitar, something always had to, like, spark an interest to challenge me.
Yeah.
And this time around, it was rockabilly and Merle Travis and Danny Gatton and all this stuff. So all of a sudden, I wanted to learn how to Travis pick, you know, hybrid.
Right.
And that was the most hardest foreign thing in my life. So yeah. it resurged this whole guitar thing.
Right.
And now I play, I mean, that's what I'm into all the time now.
That's what you practice with when you play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally. I mean, gosh, and I've gotten just, and that's been for years now. I mean, that's kind of, so changed playing for me completely differently. And it's just here recently, like you saw that crazy YouTube video where I'm just going nuts on, I just recently,
you were
like,
shredding.
Yeah. You know, and I do this sometimes because it's like, sometimes I have to record myself and put it in public just to remind myself how absolutely stupid things sound sometimes.
I get what you're saying.
It's like, I don't know. It's good therapy in a way because I don't want to, but I'm like, I'm just going to.
It's
just
good for you to get
I force myself to. I just mean, go, do it. Just throw it out there.
Here it is. I just do
with
it. These podcasts, I have them out there. And if anybody wants to say a crappy thing, they can just say it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty strange sometimes, you know, you gotta, you know, shake it off and not let it hurt your feelings. And don't even look at it sometimes.
No, it's a, well, that's, I guess, the little part of me that needs me to remind, you know, when you're sitting in your basement and you play by yourself all the time, it's like, man, I'm good.
I'm getting
good. Put it on YouTube real quick. Throw it on YouTube real quick.
And then watch it. And then.
Now everybody stills real cool. I mean, I've never had anybody say anything bad.
But everybody's in. Mostly everyone's nice, you know.
But when you listen back to yourself and you know that everybody's listening to it too, you go, oh boy, you need to practice this, you need to practice that, you need to practice that, you need to practice that.
But see, there you go.
Yeah, it's a good way of getting past all that stuff. But yeah, so that's pretty much, that's where it is now.
Yeah.
And my daughter's third birthday is next Saturday.
So you've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old.
Yeah, there'll be two. She'll be two this year. So
the
3-year-old's getting her first solid body electric guitar.
Oh, cool.
And it's a hot pink Jackson.
Oh, nice.
I had to take her back to the 80s hairband. Oh, yeah. It's kid size.
Oh, it's even and a quarter size?
Oh, it's freaking amazing. Oh, yeah, cool. They make a guitar called a Minion. And it's this tiny little guitar. And here I was, and I saw this thing, and I was like, and I just recently, I just like distance myself from a lot of the music that I played in the past and stuff because it was like, we were a funk metal band, you know?
Yeah,
God, how cliche is that? And I started out cutting my teeth on like White Snake and Dokken and Scorpions and, you know, and Iron Maiden and, you know, Megadeth and all that shit. And so it's like, oh, you know, that's not cool anymore. And for a long time, even playing a guitar solo wasn't cool anymore. And, you know, I kind of distanced myself from all that kind of stuff. Now I'm full on back into like, I want to show my metal scars.
Yeah.
You're
really good. You should do that.
You know, I'm just like,
it's really something. Well, you know?
And now that I've kind of gotten past, you know, I've gotten into another genre of music, I'm like, I go, and, you know, again, something sparks my interest or something. And like recently I heard this Kirk, God, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a real popular dude on YouTube and he's kind of a metalhead dude, but amazing player. And I was like, man, that guy's amazing. And then Buckethead. Dude, Buckethead is friggin' amazing.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was like, so I've gotten interested in all these shredder guitar player dudes that have kind of transcended that metal hairband thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, man, I. So.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I like it when I hear something that's completely different.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it all sounds the same in some way or another. But man, when you can hear this difference in something, it's like, what is that? Let's look that. And now we have so many possibilities and looking at it.
Listening. Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much crap on YouTube. It's amazing.
There's not enough time in the day, really. But
no, and there's so many amazing players. So that's kind of where, you know, now I'm kind of back to that. So I think the baby needs, Nova needs a little Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I started out with, some kind of a Charvel or a Jackson or some hair metal band guitar. And I was just like, oh, that's going to be so cute. And she, you know, it's something
she can bang it up a little, and it's okay.
It won't matter. But this kid stands in front of the TV and takes, she has a little acoustic and just and plays and that's sings. Good. Yeah,
that's good. Love, you know, Fletcher used to do that. That's my son's name is Fletcher.
That's awesome. Yeah,
so he used to do that, and now he's playing like in the symphony for Wichita Youth Symphony, and
that's cool.
It's really cool.
And I would love to see my kids, you know, be musical, and I think that they have
right
and be musical and have their dad
be there with
them, encourage them, and, as opposed to go through the.
And you have to, I tell you what, you have to practice in order to be good at anything, and. Mm-hmm. Kids don't want to always do that and take the time, so you have to somehow make it fun.
Kids don't get
or just demand it, you know. But it helps when you're just having fun, and but it's every there's not a day that doesn't go by that we're not doing music, discussing it, you know.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And that's the household I want to have too.
And he'll appreciate it someday.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just you just pray, you know, as a new parent, you know, you don't these. Kids, you don't know what their interests are yet or anything. Right. You want to support them in anything they want to do. But at the same time, I'm going, oh my God, I hope
they like cool things.
I hope she's not into ping pong.
Exactly.
I hope she doesn't play softball. Cardi because B these are things that I'm like, I can't help you. You know, right. I'm like, all I can do is go, yeah, softball. All right. Yeah.
I'll bring the chair.
I'll go to the game. You know, what else can I do? You know, exactly. Like, no pointers there. But so I'm just hoping that it's something that I can be involved in their lives.
You never know.
You know, or so. Yeah. And, you know, and if it's not, well, you do.
You tried.
Know, you do what you
do. And you know, you were there.
Yeah. You got to do whatever you can do. That's it.
All right. And now I'm going to give you a little taste of the band Diesel Crutch Michael was in with a song called Reason for Force. We'll be right back. All right. So, Michael, it's been fun talking to you. And I was wondering if there's any kind of thing that you wanted to say or add or just let people know, or what you just derived from all your experiences and what you've told me so far.
Yeah. You know, the biggest thing I can think of, you know, when we talked about all these things and kind of reminiscing about all these people that influenced my life, and what it was, you know, a really unique opportunity that all of us had to have, like a 10-year vacation, really. Right. You know, it was kind of like a total recess in the work of life, you know, to be local rock stars.
Right.
And that was just, you know, you can't replace it with anything. And it was totally not possible without all of the people that were involved. And the fact that we didn't make it.
Right. You know? Like,
the fact that we never
got famous.
Never got famous. Never got that big record contract that you wanted is okay.
Right.
Because I think me and Mike Santiago had the conversation one time. He's like, it's a good thing we never made it because we'd probably both be dead.
Oh, wow.
I think he's right.
Yeah.
I think we would.
I could see that
definitely.
Too.
Definitely. Yeah. If I would have had money and fame and stuff at that age.
Right.
Oh, I would be so dead.
Right. You would have just totally partied it into oblivion.
Totally. Would have probably embarrassed my whole family.
Yeah.
I'd probably be like, you know, yeah, would have been real bad.
Like, you'd be the one that made it, and now you're broke, and back and living with your mom in the basement or something like that.
Dead. Dead. No, I think dead.
Worse.
I'm pretty sure it would be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was an interesting point, because, you know, the thing is that we had all this fun, and it was so, you know, and these relationships, these people was what was the most important thing, you know, and what has been the most fun to talk to you about, you know, is all these people that I owe a huge debt of gratitude to, because they gave me this really rare opportunity to live this little part of my life that I think was really special to all of us, you know, that were involved.
Right.
And I can't say thank you enough for those people, you know, and the idea that we didn't make it again, it's not that bad.
No.
Because,
failure is sometimes the best way to learn anything, you know.
I know we all still have our musical ventures
and
so forth, but more importantly, people have gone on to have amazing lives. I have two amazing kids. You know? Mike Santiago has an amazing wife named Sandal J. Jr., I call her. And they have this great life. You know, they're in Texas. Zach Nicholson, the bass player from my band, my first band, Love and Rotation, is now a missionary. He is a messenger of God.
Where at?
The USSR.
Really?
Yeah, man, he goes all over the place. Yeah, he
goes to
Europe,
he's right now,
and
in
the Eastern
Russia?
Bloc. And I don't know that he's in there right now. Actually, you know, I still think he lives here in Wichita, but they go do these missions.
Okay.
What an interesting life. And his brother, Gabe Nicholson, as well, which I didn't talk about Gabe, but he is also just an interesting, interesting person. And he does this too. I mean, it's just crazy how people's lives have just, you know, gone. Sean lives in Maui and has a beautiful family and still jams, you know.
Cool.
That guy will show up on Facebook wearing a Psycho Love Tribe t-shirt.
Nice. That's always
really
cool.
Really cool stuff, you know. And I mean, so all these people, and you know, and I know that several of the Dead O guys are still doing it, man. They're still out there kicking it, you know. And
Is it Miles and Joel? What do they do?
Yeah, Miles and Joel are in a band. And I'm not sure what they're calling the band right now. They may have gone back to Dead Orchestra.
Right.
Actually. I'm not sure.
Cool.
Grant's got a career now and a grandbaby.
Wow.
I know, right? I know, right?
I see Justin on Facebook once in a while.
He's jamming. Mm-hmm. I know he's got a band together. I've never been able to catch their act, but I know he's kicking it. And then, you know, there's the ones that didn't make it.
Right.
Also, which, you know, Billy, of course, we talked about. Randy. And Ronnie True and Vernon Tolbert. I didn't bring up Vernon.
Right.
He worked kind of security for us. And there was people that I didn't bring up that, you know, that were behind the scenes as well. Like Chris Howell was such an important part of what we did. And Jeff Corbett running sound.
Right.
And
he's still running around. I see him
around. Oh, God, Jeff's got a hell of a deal going. And, you know, he runs sound for all kinds of people.
Lots of people, some big stuff. Mm-hmm.
And so he's done really great. And Neil McCarty let me write songs in his basement. I'll never forget that. I mean, I couldn't have done it without him. You know, I mean, these are all these people were so instrumental, you know, in every band that we played with. And my mom.
Right.
Good God. That woman is a saint, literally.
Literally.
Well, she put up with my dad.
There you go.
And I mean,
a traveling musician.
Yeah.
And making it work. She got them to settle down, though, and come to Wichita when those babies got old enough to go to school or whatever.
No, I have such a great appreciation for my parents because I was one of the few people that I knew that had two parents that were together, you know? I mean, most people are at school and stuff.
That's a real something.
It is, you know, and I think it was amazing. And I know it took a lot of work, and so I can't thank them enough, especially my mom, because my dad was not the easiest person to get along with.
Doesn't sound like it.
But I thank him too. Yep. You know, I mean, still, it's just.
It's all there.
Oh, yeah, man. And so, you know, to all of those people, and I mean, the whole thing is no matter what you're doing, it's not insignificant, you know?
Right.
And it's,
And the people that have made it to come back and support, you know, did you ever have anyone support you that was like huge, who you thought were famous or had made it and they still took the time for you? And that's always a blessing, you know, and to pump up what you're doing.
And that's, you know, when you talked about when we very first started the interview, you brought up Steve I. He's a great... No, I'm, you know, like I said, I never tried to play like Steve or anything, but yeah, I mean, he was, you know, he's
like a hero.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
But that guy took the time to talk to me, you know, and that meant more to me than anything. You know, it was like, and there's other people too, you know, like Ian Astbury from The Cult.
Wow, yeah.
Was encouraging, you know, and just to hear a little bit about your story and say, yeah, man, keep playing, you know, keep doing it, you know, or Dave Mustaine from Megadeth.
Yeah.
Gave me some really nice words of advice one time, you know, and it's like, but there was also people that were maybe a little less known, like all the guys from this band, the Necromantics. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
But I've heard of it.
Yeah. And Troy Destroy Russell, I can't say enough. Troy Destroy Russell still talks to me all the time on Facebook. We still talk guitar. And he was in the Resurrects and in the Necromantics. And that guy has never not once answered a message. Same with Jim Heath from Reverend Horton Heat. That guy, you know, I could send him an email. He'll respond every time. And
That's pretty amazing because these are busy people and probably get approached a lot by people.
Yeah, I mean, but these are real people that actually took the time to be encouraging. The band 2 Cents, which they had a big hit. They had one hit. one hit. And I got to meet them through a mutual friend of ours. And we talked about Korn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, they were opening for Korn.
Oh, wow.
And I'd never seen Korn. And here it was just about 5-6 years ago. It was at the Cotillion. And they brought me on the bus, and Shane and Monkey from Korn.
Uh-huh.
It was Monkey. Anyway, 2 guitar players got on that bus, and I got to play Johnny Cash with those dudes.
You're kidding.
We sat there and played Folsom Prison Blues on acoustic guitars with the Korn guys. And I told my friends, like, man, I've got to play acoustic guitar with the Korn dudes last night. And they're like, I didn't know you could tune an acoustic guitar down to G.
Damn.
No, that's harsh. But they let me sit on the stage on the drum riser and watch the show from back there.
Right on.
I mean, so there's been some people that have done some amazing things, you know, that I can't, you just can't thank enough. But all the people in all the bands that I was in, and I mean, I want them to know that, you know, without them, and I've been told by them, by a few of them, a few times that, you know, hey, without you, I never could have lived this little dream, you know?
Right.
And I always thought, hey, yeah, damn right you could. No, I'm just kidding. I was always like, no. But
that sounds like
it's mutual. It's very mutual. And, right. And it's not insignificant. And I learned that from Shane's story, you know?
Right.
Full circle, man. Because, you know, I was like, totally. It's like, this does mean something to people. And those people mean something to me. So, if I can just say.
Yes, sir.
Just say to Jason Gordon, Robbie Kreider, Billy Graves, Randy Bannon, and Kobe Cady, Sean Robinson, Tony Fortner, Zach Nicholson, Chad Stubbs, Mike Santiago, Ian Ottaway, and Brad Robinson as well. Thank you guys, all you guys. I love you. And it was a really special time. And keep it going, man.
Right.
And thank you too, Lori. Oh. This has been a great experience for me. And this
for
has
me
been
as
a
well.
Lot of fun. And I think what you're doing is awesome. And I mean, the more, and you know,
you
said, man, you'd like to have Joel Hester on sometime. I'm going to get him for you.
Thank you. That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
I want to hear that one too.
Me too. A lot of people do. And I thank you so much for coming. And I think you're an inspiration to so many people. And, you know, I love you, man.
Love you too, man. Keep going.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Drive safe out there.
And all you bitches.
Oh, yeah. You bitches.
And all you bitches.
You didn't help.
You didn't do a damn thing.
You didn't do a damn thing.
The Catch a Pocket podcast is brought to you by me, because I just like to make podcasts, so I hope y'all enjoy it. If you want to write us, we're at catchapocket@gmail.com. You can find us on anywhere you can find a podcast, pretty much, except for iHeartRadio, and I'm coming for you next, buddy. Thanks for listening, and thanks a lot to Michael Lacy for being such a famous sport on this. You did a great job, and thank you for coming in. And thank y'all for listening. Love ya. I hope y'all catch a pocket you can be proud of. Good night.
I had a dream. I went to the garage and I lifted a board, and there was kittens. Striped ones and white ones. I went to the garage and I lifted a board, and there was kittens. Striped ones and white ones. I went to the garage and I lifted a board, and there were kittens, striped ones and white ones. Sons of bitches. Go, Dad, go.
Go, Dad, go. We're too much. Your old man's gonna get credit for that one.